I do want to finish off a little bit more about kidneys before we get to Gebrachs. A couple of things that I didn't get to cover in the shiur yesterday that I really wanted to. What about changing your minhag? You know, the simplest solution might just be, if this, we were talking about the guy who marries the Sephardic girl, and he's going to be having Sedarim and half of Pesach by his in-laws every single year. So maybe wouldn't it be easier for him to just change his minhag and not keep the minhag of kidneys anymore, and then he'll be able to eat whatever he wants? Can a person do that? Is a person allowed to do that? You know, can you just be matineder? Is this a shaila when it comes to the gebrachs issue as well? I remember when my sister got married, one of my sisters married a guy who has the minhag of gebrachs, who doesn't eat gebrachs in his family. And like that first year when they were coming to my parents' house for the Seder, you know, he requested that a separate dish be put aside for him that wouldn't have any gebrachs on it, and that you know, that the gebrachs be limited so that he won't, you know, and it was a whole shaila. My mother says, is that really a thing that he's got to have a separate dish? Why can't he just be matir neder? Why can't he just get rid of the minhag, just be matir neder? He wasn't interested in being matir neder. He didn't want to change generations of a family minhag. Rightfully so. So he didn't. He wasn't. But is that a thing? Can you just be matir neder and that's it? The minhag just goes away. So I don't recall if we discussed this yesterday, but it's important to point out two things. First of all, to change a minhag. So if I accept something unique upon myself, I accept a personal chumrah that I'm going to do something, you know, but it's highly personal. I'm going to, I don't know, stand for Kriyas HaTorah. And that's not like a family minhag that goes back generations or a minhag of my community or anything. It's my personal minhag. So in my Hataras Nedarim, on Rosh Hashanah, I remember one year my back was hurting me for some reason. So in my Hataras Nedarim, before Rosh Hashanah, one of the things I included was I have this Hanhaga Tova of standing during Kriyas HaTorah. My back's been hurting lately. I don't know if I'll be able to keep it up. So Matir Neder. That you can be Matir Neder on. Rav Shachter points out very often that when it comes to a minhag that's not your minhag, it's a minhag of the entire community to which you belong, you can't be Matir Neder on an entire community's minhag. I can't just, you know, if I'm a chassid, I can't just be Matir Neder and now there's no chassidish minhag of Gebrach. That's not, it's not about me. I wasn't mekabel the minhag in the first place. It was a minhag that my forefathers were mekabel for me. That's a minhag of that entire community. Only the one who's mekabel the minhag can be matir neder on the minhag. So therefore, so does that mean that you have no way of changing the minhag? So Shachter points out, no. It is a minhag that's binding. Let's say Gebrachs is a minhag that's binding on the community of Hasidim. If you decide you don't want to be a Hasid anymore, you don't have to be a Hasidish Jew. You could decide you can be a Yaki or something. So then you keep the Yaki Shabinagim. A person is not locked into the community that they were born in. A person that very often could be born into a modern Orthodox community that keeps, Litvish Minhagim or something, and he gets inspired by a Hasidish Rebbe or something, and he decides that he wants to become a Hasid. I have a Talmud, my first year teaching, who's an 11th grader at the time, my first year teaching, going back, I don't know, 17, 18 years ago. He lives in Meir Sha'arim. If you would see him on the street, you would assume he's a regular Ravara L'Chassid. He doesn't look any different than any of the other Ravara L'Chassidim. So he grew up in the Young Israel Jamaica Estates. You know, but he no longer keeps the Minhagim of the Young Israel of Jamaica Estates. Now he keeps Minhagim that are like all the other Ravara L'Chassidim, and that's fine. He's allowed to do that. And similarly, if a Ravara L'Chassid wants to move to the Young Israel Jamaica Estates or any other shul or whatever, they can leave that community. What you can't do is say, oh no, I'm still a chassid, I still belong to that, so I'm still going to wear the gartel and I'm still going to, you know, all the chassidish minhagim, but I just don't like this one. So this one I'm going to change. That you can't do. If you belong to that community, you're bound by the minhagim of that community. That is the approach of Rav Shachter. Rav Avadya Yosef very clearly does not have that same approach. Rav Avadya Yosef writes, with regard to the minhag of Gebrachs, and we'll get to kidneys soon as well, but with regard to the minhag of Gebrachs, Rav Avadya Yosef writes that it really depends why you're keeping the minhag of Gebrachs. Why is it that a person decided that he's not going to eat Gebrachs? is it because he never decided at all? He was born into a family where no one eats kibbutz, and he just always assumed that kibbutz is chametz. He assumed that when matzah hits water, that is chametz. And that is an erroneous assumption. Says Rav Avadi Yosef, if you've kept the minhag because of an error, because you made a fundamental mistake, you don't even need ataras nedarim. You could just drop the minhag. The whole minhag is a minhag betos. You could just decide not to keep that minhag anymore. But if you understood that it was a chumrah, and even after understanding that it was only a chumrah, you kept that minhag anyway. So you knew what that minhag was. You knew that it was a chumrah, and you decided to keep it anyway. Then you're going to require hataras nedarim in order to drop the minhag. So Rav Avadia clearly assumes that hataras nedarim does work on such a thing, even though it's a communal minhag against what Rav Shechter said. I was just with Rav Shechter on Friday, and he mentioned how, I think I mentioned this yesterday, how the Sfardim that come to his house, they send their challahs in advance if they're having a suda, because they can't make a hamotzi on his challah. So he thought that it was a little funny that everything has to go like Rav Avadia Yosef. But yeah, the Sfardim generally will prefer the Pesach of Rav Avadia Yosef over the Pesach of, Ashkenazi rabbis, as great as they may be. So anyway, so Rav Avadia thinks you can be matir neder. Rav Shechter thinks one cannot be matir neder. Yeah.
The brach isn't necessarily the larger communal minhag.
Sure. I mean, it's not as old a minhag as we'll soon see, and it's not maybe as broad a minhag because it doesn't divide Sephardim and Ashkenazim. But it is, all Hasidim pretty much keep that minhag.
Within Ashkenazim,
there are different minhagim. Yeah, in Achinami, but why should that make a difference? Still, it's about a community. So you're going to keep the Yaksha minhagim, the Hasidish minhagim, whatever, the Litvish minhagim, whatever the minhagim are, you keep the minhagim of your kihila that you belong to.
The point that Rabbi said in terms of being matir, is that about
So does that apply to kitnios as well? So Rav Avadia discusses kitnios explicitly. I believe so, but I'm not certain. I'm not sure if he says that. He does discuss in his tshuva about giving to children and things like that, but I'm not sure if he discusses that element. I don't know. By Gebrux, he definitely says it. I don't know about what he says about kidneys. Now, what about another related issue, and that is when a couple gets married, is it so obvious that they both have to keep his minhag? That same girl that was the first one to ask the question in this morning's Q&A also asked the second question. Yeah, come on. And her second question was, if my father doesn't eat kidneys, no, doesn't eat kibbutz, but my mother does, what do I do? So I said, your father doesn't, but your mother does. Just getting the question clear, I didn't want to ask, are they divorced? Are they married? Like, I don't want to ask uncomfortable questions. She's like, well, I mean, my mother did before she got married. Like, wait. So you're just asking if you could just like abandon your family minhag. But what is that like a possibility that the father does not eat kibbutz or does not eat kidneys and the mother does? Ashkenazi man marries a Sephardi woman. Is that okay for her to decide, you know what, I really love eating rice and I'm going to continue to do so even though I'm married to you? So Rav Moshe writes in a tshuva that in Or Chaim Chelek Aleph Siman Kuf Mem Ches, in source number 27, Be'ish ve'isha shehem mimedinos chalukos, eich yinagu b'minhagim chalukim. It's amazing how many tshuvas Rav Moshe has about these kinds of things, about where people are mixing with others who have different minhagim. That became a much bigger issue in the melting pot of America than it ever was in Europe, because it didn't happen that often in Europe or in African countries or wherever Jews were living. that the Middle Eastern countries, it didn't happen that often. How would it be that a guy from Poland would ever meet a girl from Iraq? Like, it just wouldn't happen. But once we all come to America and we're all mixing with each other, so obviously this is, and we're all davening in the same shuls, and we're all, so obviously these shailas are going to come up much more frequently about nuschaos and different things like that. But Rav Moshe says, so what's the halacha? So he writes, Hine ish v'isha shemi medinus chalukas asher kol medina yesh l'nagim chalukim negin medina acheres lahachner lahakel v'nisu ze lezu b'New York Shaminhagim Adayin Chalukim, and in New York, everyone still kept to their own minhag, right? That's what the sociologists say. America is not a melting pot. A melting pot implies that they all become the same. It's a salad bowl. Everything still has its own identity. It's just, they're just mixing together. So, midin shnei bati dinim b'yarachas, eich yisnagum shak alechum b'minhagim medinosa, o shiyu shneim shavim lahachmer k'chum shnei medinos. He says, what are the possibilities? Either yishak alechum b'minhagim medinosa, everyone will keep their own minhag. Let the girl keep the Sephardic minhag. Let the guy keep the Ashkenazi minhag. Oh, second possibility. Shneim shavim lahachmir chumash shtei amedinos. Let both of them be machmir on every Ashkenazi chumrah and every Sephardi chumrah. So make their lives miserable. Oh, ha'ish atzrichu l'snani kiminhag habal. Oh, habal kiminhag ha'isha. Maybe the woman has to follow the husband's minhag. Or maybe the husband has to follow the wife's minhag. So four possibilities, Rav Moshe says. Keeping the theme of the number four of Pesach. So says Rav Moshe, Hinei hanachol lani yazdaiti, the isha tzrichu l'snai k'minag abal ben l'chumra ben l'kula. The woman has to follow the husband's minag. Because the halacha is, Rav Moshe says, that so sugi mesach p'sachim actually, that if you are holich mimakum l'makum, you go from some place that has one type of minhag to a place that has another type of minhag, and it's ein daita lach so l'makomo. You never plan on going back home. You have moved. The halacha, strictly speaking, is you are now supposed to observe the minhagim of the place that you have moved to, bein l'kula, bein l'chumra. And he says the Gemara in Chulin assumes that when a person goes to Eretz Yisrael, and it's ein daito lachzar, that they now have to keep all the minhagim of Eretz Yisrael. So says Rav Moshe, v'hine bi'isha l'achr nisua shenachsheves b'kol makom. When a woman gets married, she's considered to have been nichnisol l'rishus habal. She's now in the rishus of the husband, and hopefully, it's ein daita lachzar. You hope that her plan is not to one day back out. The din midaraisa is that she belongs with the husband. That's what nisun is. Nisun is, she comes into his house. You know, there are people that are makbid to rent out the chuppah, so that the chassan rents the actual chuppah itself, so that the nisun will actually be coming into his rishos. Okay, so we're not makbid about this. But the idea that that's the definition of nisun, that you go into the rishos habal, so that itself is a reflection that a nisua is bebeis habal, and that's a dinda oraisa. And that's why he says, the Gemara in Kiddushin, Daf Lamed, that if a woman is ain't sipik biyada l'kayim mitzvahs kibbut aveim, a woman doesn't have the ability, the Gemara says, to fulfill kibbut aveim once she's married. Why? That she has to answer to her husband first. Her responsibility is to her husband. Says Rav Moshe, what a strange halacha that is. Because she's married and her husband may have demands, so now all of a sudden she's putter from a mitzvah, from one of the Ten Commandments? L'chara tamu atuva, hashibon malacha di'isha l'baylu rak midrabanan. The fact that a woman has to do certain malachas for her husband, that she's got to do certain chores for her husband, that's a din d'rabbanan. That's a part of the ksuba deal. That's a din d'rabbanan. Ve'ichar malzeh hakrod denomar ish. Va'ayim tos shon ksubas, he says, sholchiach mizeh, de'ein sibik miyadu shenisun motzi mirushus av hamid rabbananu, elatzorach lomar. Mishum da'av shemina Torah lekadin shibud melacha ala isha. What you have to say is, you're right. On a daraisa level, there's no requirement of her doing melacha for the husband. Mikal makom ika din al isha shetia eitzel baila. There is a din da'oraisa that she belongs with the husband, that she belongs to the husband's household. That's a din mi da'oraisa. Shezeu Wicker Nisuin, because the notion of Nisuin is a notion Midar Raisa. And therefore, says Rav Moshe, that's a reflection of the idea that a woman is considered to have gone l'makom baila. And the way he phrases it, ein l'cha halachas m'makom l'makom gadol mizu. There is no greater move of, from one makom to another makom than when a woman gets married. And therefore, and it's adaita shelo lachzor, clearly, she doesn't plan on going back, hopefully she doesn't want to get divorced. So clearly it's adaita shelo lachzor, so she keeps all the minhagim of the husband. This is against Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach is quoted in the Sefer Halichos Beisa, Simen Yud Ches, Sif Yud Beis, that Isha me'edut ha-mizrach, ha-nesua lebal me'edut Ashkenaz, asura lechel kitnias, but v'im ein baila makbir al-kach, rashos linog beheter u'kiminhaga kodem nisu eha. That if the husband says, I don't care, you could eat kitnias, it doesn't bother me, then that's okay. Then she's in fact allowed to eat kidneys. And in the footnote, they explain that Rav Shlomo Zalman explained that when you're holich mimakom lemakom, there's no one that can be mochel. You know, all right, fine, don't keep the local menhagim. Who's in charge of that to be mochel to you? They don't have to keep the local menhagim. But he says by the woman, the ikar tam is that she has a shibud to her husband. The shibud is to do like him and to keep his menhagim. Well, he has every right to be mochel any shibud. So if you understand that it's purely going mimakum lemakum, it's like a motion, the husband can't even be mochel. He can't even say, it's okay, I don't mind. You don't have to keep my menhagim. You know, for years, my sister struggled with this. Can she eat matzah pizza? You know, my brother-in-law wouldn't. Can she? So that if you hold like Rav Moshe, no, you can't. You're bound by your husband's minhagim. You were holich mimakom lemakom. If you hold like Rav Shlomo Zalman, as long as he's mochel, you're allowed to. As long as he's mochel, it would be permissible. Rav Shachter just often points out one more caveat over here, and that is that it's not so pashut that it always has to be the husband's minhagim. He said, you know, very often the husband is very weak minhagim. He doesn't know his minhagim. For example, in my family, my father has not so many minhagim because my grandfather died when my father was 7 years old. So my uncle, who was the oldest child, was, I think, 9 maybe. And so they don't remember anything. My grandmother doesn't really remember what the minhagim were, or didn't when she was alive remember what the minhagim were. So they don't remember anything about the minhagim. And we know which part of the world we come from, what the minhagim likely were, or whatever. They didn't really have any minhagim. So someone like that, or let's say someone even stronger, a bal tshuva, doesn't know any family minhagim. Or even stronger, a ger, never had any family minhagim. Marries a woman who comes from a family of strong minhagim. So Rav Shachter often points out, it doesn't have to be the husband's minhagim. If she has strong minhagim and he doesn't, so then follow her minhagim. Let them follow her minhagim. It doesn't have to be following his minhagim. L'chor Rav Moshe would disagree. Rav Moshe would say, no, holech mimakom lemakom, al pidin, the woman is holech lemakom baila, so whatever he decides those minhagim are, that's what she's got to keep. So that's a three-way machlokas, three-way difference of opinion, l'chora, in that regard. Yeah.
Would that be to go into a hotel when you eat kibrach, or the hotel doesn't eat kibrachs, and you're going on a continuous basis every first day you go to a hotel? So in a sense, you're going from holach from lachom to lachom, but
no, it's day to lach, sir. You're going to come back. Uh-huh. So I don't think that would be enough. We'll get to kibrachs in just a second. Just to point out, even if, you know, certainly if you go to a hotel and that serves kibrachs and you don't eat kibrachs, you need to speak to the mashgiach and find out what is and is not kibrachs. Because you shouldn't be eating the stuff that's kibrachs. You should speak to the mashgiach and find out what you can and cannot eat. But even if you do eat kibrachs, you also need to know what is and is not kibrachs. I can't tell you how many times at a kiddush in a hotel, there's no label on anything, what's kibrachs and what's not kibrachs, and there's a much more fundamental problem. Was much more fundamental. That applies to every Jew. What bracha are you going to make? You don't know what bracha to say on the cake. Is it a shakel? Is it a mezonos? What is it? So I would say it's very hard to tell from taste sometimes. You know, does this taste like mashed potatoes? Is this potato starch? You know,
in general, kishma psuda. You have to have mezonos in order to be
correct. I know, right? That too. Right. And people have no idea. They have no idea what they're eating. So it's troubling that they don't ask that question. And it's the achrayus of the mashgiach to make that clear, to put out signs of what's kibrux and what I would think that they should do such a thing. I was listening on the way in this morning to Rabbi Radinsky from Muncie, and he was talking about how ridiculous some of these chumras have gotten. So he said that a few years ago, someone came over to him and said, Rebbe, what gas station do you buy your gas from? He's like, I don't know, whichever one is the cheapest price. And they're like, no, because I heard that this gas station has kidneys in the mixture of the ethanol or whatever in the gas. So he's like, they didn't even say chametz. They said kidneys. Even like, if it was chametz, it wouldn't be a problem either. But that it's kidneys, you know. So he's like, so I was clearing if a Sephardi filled up his car, can he give a ride to an Ashkenazi, you know? So yeah, we have to. What? No. He said that was my Shamsa Gadol drasha. I assume he was joking. Shamsa Gadol drasha. Rabbi Willick said his Shabbos HaGadol drasha this year is going to be Mike Pence. I told you this? Mike Pence? Mike Pence has two minhagim that he's getting in. Yeah, he's a big tzaddik. He has two min. Yeah. So,
what is
it? One that he won't drink wine unless his wife is there. He won't take a sip of wine unless his wife is there. And two, that he'll never dine with another woman alone, even if it's purely business. So the left is killing him for this. How sexist that is, how many women have not had the opportunity to advance in their careers because they couldn't have dinner with Mike Pence because he decided that he's going to view every woman as an object and not as, you know, and not just as another person. And they're going after him like crazy. He's such a moral, normal, whatever. Okay, he said that when he was first voted to Congress, there was another guy from Indiana at the same time who was also first elected to Congress. The other guy moved without his family to Washington. He moved with his family to Washington because he's not going to be without his wife. He's not going to live without his wife. And he said the other guy has had how many affairs and how many divorces already and how many, you know, how much personal tzaras. And he, Baruch Hashem, he didn't say Baruch Hashem, but he has his, his shalom bayis is intact. He has a head on his shoulders. He knows what it takes. Okay, anyway. Let's move on to Gibrax. So, in terms of halacha, is there any issue with Gibrax? So, first of all, just the definition of Gibrax, of course, is any matzah that comes into contact with any liquid. So there are some people that are super duper makbid, that not only will they not dip the matzah in the soup, and they won't make matzah balls, and they won't bake with, matzah meal, they won't even eat matzah over the table. Anyone have this minute? That they only eat matzah over the floor and everything else gets eaten over the table because lest a crumb of matzah fall on the table where there might be water on the table, something spills on the table. So they have to be very concerned. So they'll only eat matzah over the floor, make a mess of the floor, they'll clean the floor afterwards, I guess, but not eat matzah over the table. So where does this come from? Why are we concerned if matzah comes into contact with liquid? There is a Gemara in Pesachim Daf Mem Aleph Amud Aleph that tells us explicitly, no worries. You don't have to worry about any of this. Titania, Yotzin Biroki Kasharui Ubimavushal Shaloni Muaktiv Rameyan. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Yotzin Biroki Kasharui Avalobimavushal Afopi Shaloni Moach. They argue, cooked matzah, can you be Yotzin the mitzvah of Achilles matzah? For your Kazayas Rishon and the Lala Seder. They agree, soaked matzah? Fine. To soak the matzah in order to be yotzei your mitzvah, the Leila Seder, they agree that that is totally fine. They don't even discuss, well, might it be asur? No, the question was about being yotzei the mitzvah of achilas matzah. Is the fact that it's soaked, does that take away its status as matzah? They don't even discuss, is it chametz? No, of course it's not chametz, it's matzah. Once something is baked, it's baked, it's done, it can no longer become chametz. Not only if matzah is ready baked, even if you have raw flour that you bake fully, that you fully toast or bake, it can no longer become chametz. So there's no question that this cannot become chametz. This is the famous tshuva in the Shas, Tshuvas Mimamaki. Familiar with this tshuva? There was a certain Jew who, when they were living in the ghetto, they weren't allowed to bring things in from outside the ghetto. Very few of them were actually allowed to go outside the ghetto. But there was one Jew who was working somewhere, and he was a necessary worker in a certain factory or something, so they let him leave the ghetto, and he smuggled in the lining of his jacket, he smuggled in flour, a little bit of flour each day, so that they could make matzahs. And they actually made, and are you familiar with the Sefer Shabbos Mimamakim? Ephraim Ashri was the Rav of the, was it the Kovna ghetto, I think. And he wrote tshuvas that came out that people were asking during the Holocaust, essentially. Heartbreaking cases. So then he moved to New York. He lived in New York for, I think he died in, not that long ago, like the 1990s maybe. So Ephraim, maybe even later, Ephraim Ashri was a very, very a special person. So he wrote volumes of tshuvas that people asked him during, you know, living through the Gehenim of the Holocaust. So one of the questions was, this fellow kept on bringing in, he says his name there in the tshuvas, which is also amazing. In the tshuvas he tells you the names of these tzaddikim who are asking the questions and they're going through these different things. It makes it so much more real when you have a name to it. It's like the Gemara Bava Basra says that that Eov lo hayav lo nivra, that Eov never existed, so why didn't he tell us his name? Just tell us it was a guy. Meaning a name makes it sound like real. So the Gemara says, no, because if you're ever going to tell a story and you want people to connect to the story, you give details. So Ephraim Ashri, these are real stories. These aren't fake stories. Ephraim Ashri wants us to connect not just to the Torah, to the Halacha, but to the stories that he's telling. So he gives actual names, places, vivid details. So he says this guy was schlepping in every day, smuggling in, to the point that they were able to make enough matzahs for 100 Jews in the Kovna ghetto to have a kazayis of matzah. That's significant. And then one day he was smuggling in the flour and he got caught. The guards caught him and they beat him to a pulp. And they knocked out all of his teeth when they were beating him. And they, so now 100 other Jews are going to have matzah, are going to have a kazayis of matzah. He can't have it because he has no teeth to chew the matzah. So he asked Rabbi Ephraim Ashri, what should I do? The only way I'd be able to ingest the matzah is by soaking it, when I'm a Hasidish Yid. And my minig is that I don't eat kibbutz. Should I soak the matzah in order to be able to have the kazayas, or should I observe my minig that kibbutz is an issue? So obviously, what's the answer going to be? Just soak the matzah, because obviously, you know, that would overpower whatever the minig is. But like most of the Shuvas Mimamakim, it's not about so much what the answer is, but the story behind the tshuva. But the Gemara is explicit that soaked matzah is perfectly good for the chiyuv. A woman asked me this year that she had surgery on her jaw, she can't chew. So she asked what to do. Soak the matzahs. You soak the matzahs in water, and that way you'll be able to have a kazayis. Not more than a kazayis, but have a kazayis. So that way you'll be able to be yotze the mitzvah. So that's very clear in the Gemara. In fact, Shulchan Aruch Paskins, Yotza Adam b'matzah shruya v'hu shalom imocha, avul b'bash le'ena yotze ba. That as long as you don't cook the matzah, soaked matzah is perfectly fine to be yotze the chiyuv. And the Mishnah Berurah writes, you know, we don't do that l'chadchila, but b'di'evet, certainly for a zake and a chola who has a difficult time eating dry matzah, then it becomes l'chadchila. Shas adchak di'evet ami, so a zake and a chola is considered a shas adchak, so we rely on a shas adchak. I remember when Rabbi Maurice Lamb, Zichrono Levracha, was very old, he lived around the corner from me, he had serious health issues, so for him to chew on matzah, dry matzah, and digest it was very difficult. So he asked me for an eitzah. He said, I don't think I'm going to be able to eat a kazayis matzah this year. And he was very, very upset by it. So I suggested svardi matzahs, you know, something softer that maybe he can handle. Just svardi matzahs have to be handled with care because they have to be frozen. If you don't keep them frozen, they're just, they turn into bricks. They're like much, much harder. So you got to keep them frozen and then heat them up like 5 minutes before you want them. And then they're soft. And then they're like a lafa. They're soft like a lafa. So I suggested svardi matzahs. He's like, what? You're allowed to do that? I said, Rav Shachter wrote a tshuva that you're allowed to do it. He said, show me the tshuva and I'll eat it. So I showed him the tshuva and I delivered some svardi matzahs to him that year. That year I didn't have because I only had one box, so we gave it to him. And he told me afterwards it was disgusting. He said it wasn't worth it. But maybe that's an eitzah also. But the simplest eitzah that they always recommended is soaking the matzah. That you soak the matzah for a zakir and a chola, and then they'll be able to eat the matzah. Now,
Sfarim matzahs what you use for korban, right?
I use sfarim matzahs for korban. Yeah, some are makbid. Korich, as I think we've discussed, means to wrap. It doesn't mean a sandwich. So that's one of the rayas that people bring, that horseradish can't be the real maror, because you can't. They assume that korich means to wrap the maror around the matzah. Because how could it possibly mean to wrap the matzah? Our matzahs are crackers. You can't wrap a matzah. So it must mean that you wrap the maror around the matzah. You can wrap a piece of lettuce around a matzah. You can't wrap horseradish around a matzah. Unless you say that, no, korich is to wrap the matzah around the maror, is, you know, what the idea was. Like a lafa, that's what they used to do. What they had was, they would have korban pesach, which is lamb, and they would have maror, which is lettuce, and a lafa around it. Sounds delicious, no? So that's luchara, what they would do. Al matzos maror miyochluhu. That's luchara, the din midaraisa. But anyway, so I use Friday matzos just because, I like to wrap the matzah around the maror, and also it's great shtick, you know, to bring to the Seder to have Friday matzos. So that's also, whichever one is more valuable. So where does this idea of gebrux come from? It's a beferish gemara that there's no such thing, that there's no problem. So where on earth does it come from? So there are a few reasons that are offered. Beis Yosef in Siman Tav Samech Aleph quotes from a number of rishonim that once you bake the matzahs, shelo yitnam b'mapa b'kli sheyesh bo kemach, shemi yidbak ha-kemach b'matzah v'achar kach yishra matzah b'merach. He says, you've got to be careful. Keep the matzahs away from raw flour after they've been baked. Because if there's raw flour that lands on the matzahs after they've been baked, so that's raw flour, then and then you dip the matzah in soup, then that raw flour is going to come in contact with the liquid with the soup, and it's going to be machmitz. It's going to be asil dechimutz. So you could certainly understand that if, let's say, you're in a matzah bakery, and they take the matzahs out of the oven, at the same time, they're making new matzahs. How do they make new matzahs? They open up bags of flour. Flour flies everywhere, and a nice layer of flour lands softly on these freshly baked matzos. So if that's a real concern, if that could actually happen, so then you have chashash chimutz by putting those matzos, not because of the matzos, but because of the flour that landed on the matzos. So that's one suggestion as to where the minhag of gebrux came from, because the matzah bakeries weren't set up properly, and it was all in one room where they're opening bags of flour, and flour flies everywhere, and where the matzos are actually coming out. Nowadays, they don't have it like that. There will be no matzah bakery you will visit, hopefully, that will have such a setup, where in the same room that they're opening the bags of flour is where the ready-made matzos are. They would not allow that. They have sometimes they have too much of a chain that goes so long from the time the matzahs get kneaded till they get to the oven, because they want to keep it so far apart. I remember when one of the machine matzah bakeries last year had a whole new facility. They changed their entire system. They built a whole new facility, and Rosh Hashanah went down there to check it out for the OU, and he said, "This is terrible." It was so long from the time it was kneaded till the dough was like. It was way too long, way too much time. Now, it wasn't actually more than 18 minutes where it's mamish chametz, but it was just too much time to mess around with. So he didn't like it at all. He made them change the whole, Rabbi Ganak made them go and change the entire system. But anyway, so that's possible reason number one. Possible reason number two is very similar to the kitnius reason we discussed yesterday. And that's quoted by the Knesset HaGedola, Simen Tav Samech Aleph. What you have over here is not a copy of the Knesset HaGedola, it's a copy of, I think, a footnote in Rabbi Eider's Sefer where he quotes the Knesset HaGedola, but he quotes the exact Lashon of the Knesset HaGedola, where he writes, Omra Ma'asev, Shamati B'yimei Aldusi Shapam Achas, one time, one time a woman was frying fish in oil in a frying pan. The minhag is, and I think this is the way people make fried fish, is they put a little flour on the outside of the fish so that it doesn't burn. And the fish won't become attached to the pan. Obviously, you can't do that on Pesach. You can't put flour in it. So, lacha yishan niskeres matzah afuya v'tach nosa adasher dak hadek hetev v'nasis kikemach. What did she do? She used what we call matzah meal. and she put matzah meal on the fish. V'itiach bas hadagim. Ube'es, uba'ona, ha'hi, nichnasa ha'shcheina, v'ras alisha ha'niskeres, she'isa matachas hadagim ba'osa ha'kemach, v'chashu she'isa kemach mamish. The Amoritz neighbor walks in, sees this woman frying the fish, and this woman is a Heiliger Rebbetzin, and she's dipping the fish in matzah meal. It looks like she's dipping the fish in flour, and the neighbor says, oh my gosh, I never knew that's mutter. I never knew you're allowed to dip your fish in flour and then fry it in oil. And the woman decided to do, the neighbor used actual flour. Husband comes home, and the husband finds that his wife is putting flour on the fish on Pesach. The yigarba, and he got angry at her. So she says, don't get angry at me. The rabbi's wife did it. The husband was... The descriptive language of how people reacted to chametz. You know, nowadays everything's like, oh, okay, all right, so get rid of it. Charada gedola! There might be chametz there! V'yaratz al beis hachacham, v'shal le'ish es hachacham, imkinim advarim. And they asked her, is this true? Sharmelo ishto, what my wife told me, what you were doing? V'tomelo chas v'shalom, matzah afuya ha'isa. This was baked matzah, it was matzah meal. V'nishmu hadvarim l'chachmei ir, gozru shalayasu od kenin le'maris ha'ayin. So that's when they made a gzera, that in this city, no more matzah meal. Because of that concern that people will confuse it with regular flour. So that is a second possible source of the minhag of Gibratz. That one story. A third possible source of the minhag of Gibratz is quoted in the Sefer Gilyonei HaShas on Psach and Daf Mem Beis. Who wrote the Gilyonei HaShas? No, close.
Oh,
Rav Yosef Engel. Rav Yosef Engel wrote the Gilyonei HaShas, not to be confused with, and often yes, confused with, but not to be confused with, the Gilyonei HaShas. Gilyonei HaShas is on the side of your Gemara. That was written by Rikivegu. So Gilyonei HaShas is Rav Yosef Engel's commentary on the Gemara, and every line in Rav Yosef Engel is a chat. Everything is like, you know, always with a twist, with a special chap. So in Gilyonei HaShas, he's commenting on Gemara Pesachim Daf Mem Beis that talks about chasisi. What are chasisi? So says Gilyonei HaShas near Beinai. Just to give a little bit of background. The Gemara there says that they were using chasisi, and Rava said to them, how could you do that? How could you do chasisi? The avodim of the Reish Galus are going to see you, and they're going to think that that it's okay, and that there aren't any problems over here. What's chasisi? What will the avodim see? What will they think? What's the problem? Not clear at all in the Gemara. Not clear at all. Then the Gemara is the second day of that Rava Atzmo! Rava himself, the second day in the Gemara, used chasisi. Not only did he not get upset by it, he himself did it. What's going on? Says Gilyonei HaShas. Near Beinai Pirush Matza Afuya Shetochim Lasom Vashna Lasom B'mayim Umolim Basakaderos. Pre-baked matza. Matza meal. That's what chasisi is. Matza has already been baked, and they would grind it up, and then they would use it as matza meal. That's the Rif. V'chein Pirush B'sefer Apardis L'Rashi. Says Rav Yosef Engel, that's the source for the minhag of Gebratz. According to the first day in the Gemara, why did Rava get upset that they were using this chasisi or tasisi? I don't remember. Because the avadim are going to see. The avadim are mizalz b'yisurim. They're not so educated. Ubavanaseinu b'doros halalu lo yodanu im tovu manachnu me'avadim agrum shalahem. Nowadays, are we any better than the lowest avadim in those times? Chiyosef is a beitz of avam adal. Tibnas gulin the shalach rabbein tam lebnei malum b'nei b'schar ein b'nei torah v'atem b'nei torah. And he quotes Mar Mekomos that maybe we are less b'nei torah than the avadim of those times. So if you weren't allowed to be making with matzah meal in front of the avadim, because they're going to get the wrong impression, or they're going to actually use real flour, they're going to make mistakes. So you can't be making in front of any of us, because all of us are no better than their avadim. That is another possibility of where Gebrux comes from. Very similar to the previous possibility. There is a Shitas HaRa'avan. I just don't have a Maramakum for it over here, but I believe Shitas HaRa'avan says that it was all based on a mistake, that it was all a misinterpretation, that the parents were makbid not to have raw flour and not to put it in anywhere near water, obviously. And the kids thought that it means not even to have anything else near water. I'm not sure. The source for the minhag, like the strongest source for the minhag, the one who really came out and formulated why this minhag should exist, is the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, the first Lubavitch Rebbe. And even the first Lubavitch Rebbe, in the first line of his tshuva, in Simin Vav, in source number 8, says, important to realize, Be'emes kigam sheinu isur gamur, it's not an isur, it's not really chametz, he says, you can't say that it's a baseless chumra. And, you know, these are the things that we do for the sake of chametz. We're extra machmir on a lot of things when it comes to chametz. Fine. So he says, Yisrael Kedoshim are nizar ma'od ma'od. And he points out another concern. Not that flour is going to land on the matzah, but that when you bake the matzahs, it may not get fully baked all the way through. And there may be pockets of flour in the matzah, and pockets of unbaked flour, and unneeded flour in the matzah. Now that, if that exists, that unneeded, unbaked flour is now going to come in contact with liquid, that could become chametz. You would imagine that that would be a bigger concern with thicker matzahs, with Sephardi matzahs, than it would be with our paper-thin Ashkenazi matzahs. You know, a matzah, technically speaking, in the Beis HaMikdash, the Lechem HaPanim was matzah, and it was a tefach. So the Shulchan Aruch says we shouldn't do that. We shouldn't have matzahs that are a tefach, because there could be major, tefach is like this high. There could be major pockets of flour in tefachai matzah. So we do a little thinner. Even the Sephardi matzahs are fine in terms of the thinness that we need to have for our matzahs. Even they probably satisfy the sheet of the Ramah. But that's where you might have such a concern. Now, there are, but because our matzahs are very thin, the Shari Tshuva in Siman Tav Samach, Sivka Yud, just points out there's no reason to be machmir for Gebrux because our matzahs are so thin. So there's no reason to be concerned of any flour caught in there. And furthermore, even if there was flour caught in these little pockets, the halacha is, Vilna Gaon points out, and the Vilna Gaon obviously was not concerned about Gebrux. There's famous stories about him putting a matzah ball in his window that everyone should see, that he wasn't concerned about it, of Dafki eating matzah balls to, you know, be Motzi Miliban or whatever. You know, they say Reb Chaim Volozhiner went to visit the Gra when the whole tumult was happening about Gebrux, and he wanted to ask him what he thought, and before he had a chance to ask him, he served him soup with a matzo ball in it, you know. So the Vilna Gaon says that the halacha is, even flour that's already baked can't become chametz. See, even if there are pockets of flour, yeah, but it was in the oven, right? So once it was in the matzo oven and it was baked, the flour that's already baked can't become chametz. So there's no reason to be concerned. And these are all reasons why me'ikra din, there's no reason to be concerned. Now, there are a lot of unusual elements of this chumrah. For example, even those who are machmir nati ikabrats, even the most serious chassidim who are machmir nati ikabrats, ikabrats on the last day of Pesach. What a strange minhag. If you're concerned that it's chametz, so all of a sudden, last day of Pesach, oh, okay, so now it's okay. Yom Tov Sheni Shel Galios and Chatzaritz. Where does that come from? So the different chassidim suggest different possibilities. One possibility is that they dafko, it's very important when you keep a chumrah to know what's a chumrah and what's a din. So they dafko wanted to emphasize that this is a chumrah, let people know that it's not a din. Because if you think that every chumrah that you have is really a halacha, then you're going to start casting aspersions on other people who don't keep your chumrahs and thinking that they're not religious and that they're not doing the halacha, but they are doing the halacha. So that's one reason. Another reason they suggest, one of the things Rav Shitzer suggests, is that it's very important that Klal Yisrael have a sense of togetherness, and that people be able to eat at each other's houses, and that people be able to connect with each other. So even if you're going to do something that makes it that you're not going to be able to eat at someone else's house for the whole rest of Pesach, because you're going to have a chumrah like a brax, but at least on Yom Tov Achron, at least on the last day, we should at least be able to connect with each other. What? Yeah, no, it's you know, in this case, the kash is better than the teretz. Come on, you know, the kash on these terutzim are not really. It's very, very difficult to understand why all of a sudden the minhag just goes away on Yom Tov Achron. There are also different levels of minhag. Some people are makbid not even to let their matzah come in contact with pure fruit juice. Now, the reason that that's an incredible chumrah is that if fruit juice comes in contact with flour, with raw flour, what results from that? What comes out from that? So, not chametz d'oraisa. Not chametz d'oraisa. Can't be. The Gemara says beferish. Fruit juice can't be machmetz. It can't be machmetz. It can start the chametz process, but it can't be machmetz. So, what the worst that comes out from that is chametz midrabanan, is chametz nuksha. There are a few definitions of chametz nuksha. One of them is chametz that the chametz process started, but then was aborted before it became fully chametz. We assume that fruit juice has the ability to begin the chimutz process, but not to have the chimutz process conclude. And we also assume, Rashi assumes in Mesachus Pesachim, that not only can it begin the chimutz process, it can happen much quicker than 18 minutes. So you never want fruit juice to come in contact with flour, with raw flour, but if it does, you're not going to have chametz d'oraisa anyway. So some people are makil with the matz, even the machner and the brux, but if the whole concern is only the rabbanan concern anyway, even if there were flour there, so it'll be makil with fruit juice. Nafkamina, matzah pizza. Can use tomato sauce for matzah pizza. Now, the reason why you probably can't use tomato sauce anyway is that it's probably not pure tomato sauce, meaning it's made with water also. So if there's water mixed in with the fruit juice, then it's definitely a problem. So, meaning if you keep gebrux, then you definitely are violating that minhag. So, but if you're using tomato paste or whatever, you check the ingredients and it's just pure crushed tomato, so then it would depend on whether you keep that element of the chumrah. Right, that's why matzah ashira, we don't eat matzah ashira unless you're a chola. For a chola, we're making a matzah ashira. Why don't we eat it when we're not a chola? Because we assume that midrabanan, it begins the chimutz process, and therefore may be an issue for us, midrabanan. It's unfortunate. Sometimes you'll have matzah ashira, and they'll put it on the package in Hebrew. Rak l'cholim u'zakenim, or something like that. That's really nice for people who speak Hebrew, but if you don't speak Hebrew, you know, that's a problem. What about kelim that gebrux were cooked in? So many who are concerned that it's a real chashash chimutz will not even allow the kelim. Will not even eat from the kelim, except for the kelim they used on the last day of Yantav last year. And that they're mitzarif the fact that after so much time has gone by, that mistama, the blios, aren't there anymore. Similar to the Chacham Tzvi. Chacham Tzvi writes that after 12 months, there are no blios in kelim anymore. That the blios just go away. So here it's not exactly 12 months, it's 11 months and 3 weeks, unless it was a leap year. But still, they assume that by then the blios have gone away. So some are machmir on kelim, but not from last year. Others are machmir, are totally makel on kelim. These are all things of chumrah al gabi chumrah. So plus the plates that you're going to be eating from is already a kli shlishi and everything like that. So maybe there's room to be makel on something like that. Certainly, you know, like we said, if you could eat on paper, or you can designate a kli that you're going to eat from, that's just for you. So that probably for most chassidim, they would probably want to be makbid about that. But if you're going to a hotel with your non-chassidic wife's family, and you come from a chassidish family, like someone asked me this morning, someone's last name is Twersky. So one thing you know, if their last name is Twersky, is they come from a chassidic dynasty, a significant one. Right? But the guy married a girl who's not from a Hasidic family, and that family's going away for a hotel. And he didn't know what to do. Can he go? Can he not go? And his father said, our family tradition is, Shalom Bayis comes above all else. So you go. So he went, he's going to the hotel, but he doesn't know. Can he eat on the kelim? So he's going to have to be making on the kelim. There's nothing, what's he going to do? That's the only kelim available. I don't know if the hotel will accommodate to put aside a separate set of kelim just for him, but to at least not eat the gebrach itself. That he should probably still be machmir about. Okay. Have a chag kosher.